Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to give you a brief program note on this episode of Drugs and Stuff. Dave and I record these episodes in advance. That way, we always have one in the can ready to go in case he happens to be traveling that week or I happen to be traveling. Anyway, we recorded this show right on the cusp of everything, you know, the world going crazy with this whole pandemic. So we don't really address it a lot in this show. I don't know if we address it at all, actually. But yeah, I just figured I'd let you know, give you that heads up. And hey, listen, to everybody out there who's listening to this right now, I hope that you're taking care and that you're staying safe. And guys, let's get through this thing. Let's keep the hope. And God, we are in some crazy times. So anyway, like I said, I don't think we talk about it in this show, but I don't know about you. That might be a welcome break. I know that talking about something other than what's going on with this virus is definitely a break for me. All right, guys, take care.
Well, welcome back to Drugs and Stuff.
Fuck, you nailed it. Hey, what's up, guys? On this episode of Drugs and Stuff, we have a couple of steroids in the news story. Somebody who was caught importing some things that were called steroids. They weren't really steroids, but we'll get to that. Another steroids in the news story. And then after that, we've got listener questions, everything from questions about when a figure competitor should begin their cycle, what the role Novadex would be in the wellness division. We've got questions about recovering from a tendon rupture and what supplements would be beneficial for that, plus a whole lot more. Stick around. We're going to get to them right now. Well, listen, I've got to start us out, we've got a couple steroids in the news stories, and we have a bunch of listener questions. So this first story, Dave, that we'll go to, I think I'm supposed to, this is where I'm supposed to get like very American and be like, Dave, we have breaking steroids in the news. Is that good?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's fucking shit.
Headline, this is from Brisbane Times. So this is the Brisbane Times in Australia. Headline says, I didn't even know. Former drug squad commander's son pleads guilty to importing steroids. The son of a former NSW police drug squad commander told authorities he had no idea the supplements he had ordered from the United States were considered steroids, which were illegal to import into Australia. Now, here's where it gets very interesting.
What were the supplements?
This is where it gets interesting, because just by reading that headline, I'd be like, this is a crock of shit. This guy's ordering something legal and he's just trying to cover his own ass. But let's get to the meat of this. So Daniel Katsagonis, 32 years old, was charged in 2018 after he ordered supplements containing, ready, drum roll. Thank you. DHEA. And DMAA, 1,3-dimethylamine, as part of his online business.
That is genuinely
Flex Nutrition Depot.
You could argue that as someone who's dealing in nutrition, he should be aware of what the banned substance list is in his country. I know most of the supplement retailers over here are very aware when they're pushing the grey areas of the law regarding supplements.
Yeah.
They still do it, and then they still deny knowledge afterwards, but they know that the area around SARMs is grey, that the area around pro-hormones is grey, and that they do risk having those products removed off their shelves if they stock them.
Okay.
But at the same time... it is a viable argument that he was unaware that those supplements contain bad substance, particularly if they're supplements that he's buying from an OTC retailer who a wholesaler who's selling over-the-counter supplements.
Yeah, okay. So in July 2018, second package was imported from Honolulu, which contained 1,824 bottles of a powdered supplement called Stimlord. The label on the bottle did not list DMAA as the ingredient, but listed Yohimbine HCL. Yohimbine HCL, another prohibited substance. They are not fucking around in Australia.
No, they're strict. They are strict. They've gone a bit to town on things, and I think a lot of it is actually, unfortunately, it's been done by very miseducated and very poorly informed people. I mean, the original classification of steroids as being a what they basically a class one or a class A drug, so same as cocaine and meth and those sort of drugs, was driven by the fact that they believed that the mass steroid market in Australia was controlled by the biker gangs, and the biker gangs are their equivalent of organized crime to a large extent.
Okay,
that's not true. That's not to say that there aren't biker gang individuals that sell steroids, but as a business, the biker gangs don't generally get involved with the retail of steroids. They focus on the narcotic side of things.
This is ridiculous, though. DHEA.
So, oh, yeah. It just seems to have spiraled from there where, you know, a bit almost sort of God complex individual driving forward all these restrictions to save the youth of the country from these toxic drugs from overseas with no real understanding of what it is they're talking about or the drugs they're dealing with.
Okay, this is making a little more sense to me. It says it listed on the label containing a 1-DHEA blend. This tells me this is probably a DHEA-based prohormone. It says it did not... sampled, confirming it did not contain DHEA. It contained a 1-DHEA blend.
I suspect that this is a supplement company that's ordering what we term in the UK as grey products.
Yeah.
And he's dropped back on that old age-old argument, I didn't know as a defence, when in fact he knew he was skirting around the edges.
Yeah.
I mean, just the description of the pre-workout products, which are a dry powder vial containing DMMA, it's like, well, that's an injectable or potentially oral, but I suppose, powder that needs to be reconstituted. That's not your standard delivery system for an over-the-counter supplement.
I think it is a powder like to be drank. Stimlord, a powdered supplement. I'm guessing these, and it looks like the guy has a supplement company. I'm guessing that this is the DMAA product. This is like there are so many pre-workouts that have DMAA in it, but this guy is looking at potentially 5 years prison time for bringing this stuff in. I don't know, man. We have a place just down the street from me on the way to my gym. They sell, it's kind of like a no-name supplement company, supplement retailer, and they have all the gray area stuff. They have like a shelf of pro hormones. They have a shelf of all the DMAAs. And listen, man, I know Jacked had like 25 milligrams of DMA in it. They have this stuff that's containing like 75 milligrams. Now, I stopped in there one day, and the guy was like, dude, you just missed it. This company ran a special. They put 100 milligrams of DMA in their shit for a while. It was like they all sold out instantly. They're selling them for like $60 a tub.
It's well known in the UK what substances are, generally well known what substances are allowed and what aren't. It doesn't stop people stocking them.
Yeah.
But we tend to deal with it through our trading standards. So they sort of manage product sales. And they don't generally push for prosecution unless you're a repeat offender or you've got something in there that's particularly naughty.
Yeah.
So the general process over here is take them off the shelf or we will. If you fail to do that, then they'll start getting a bit more heavy-handed with you. Mm. But, there seems to be example-making going on to a degree, but I don't believe he did not know what he was buying. I think it does sound like these are definitely great products, and he's gone and literally outsourced them overseas because he knows he can't get them within the Australian
Absolutely, borders. Absolutely. Said he had no knowledge of the product or the ingredient, DHEA, being illegal in Australia, and assumed if it cleared customs, there was no issue. He said he knew DMAA was not allowed in Australia, but since the container of Stimlord did not list it as an ingredient, as far as I was concerned, no DMAA, then I was still pretty good to go. Pretty good to go.
He could have an argument with that one. If he was unaware of the contents of the thing, then he could argue that it's not his responsibility for the fact that the manufacturers lied to him about the product's content, ingredients. I'm trying to think of a word there and got it all wrong. So he's probably got some argument there. Maybe not so much on the other one. It would depend as well on if there's any other evidence about products in his shop that were, or on his website that were suspect.
Yeah. His it's interesting that they still, the DMAA, that they put that under steroids. He says his father, Arthur Katagonis, recently retired from the NSW police after 38 years of service, which saw him head up the cybercrime and fraud, gangs and drug squads. During his time as head of the gang squads, he called for harsher penalties for those caught dealing and using steroids.
The irony is just beautiful in a way, isn't it?
Oh, man. I've got another story here. Now, this one does seem to be like a pretty big deal. This is from the EU. OCS, the latest news on crime and security in Europe. A criminal gang that trafficked anabolic steroids into Europe dismantled in Slovakia. So February 24th, this was released. A criminal group specializing in the trafficking of anabolic steroids from Asia to Europe has been dismantled, leading to the arrest of 24 in Slovakia, according to the European judicial agency Eurojust. Several thousand steroid tablets, growth hormones and drugs, and 2 tons of non-compliant food supplements were seized during raids on properties in Poland and the Ukraine. Over 2 million euros in criminal assets were also confiscated, Slovak media reports. Anabolic steroids are often used in amateur sports as well as in gyms and fitness centers to enhance performance, and blah, 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 blah. The raids marked the conclusion of a 2-year investigation that was initiated by the Gendarmerie Marine of France, where the traffickers supplied shops specializing in food supplements. This led to the opening. Let's see, anything interesting here? Investigation seized 1,000 tablets, 224 amps, and 23 vials of anabolic steroids and hormone modulators. That doesn't sound like a lot.
No, it doesn't. It sounds like a very small amount.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a criminal organization to me.
It's funny that this comes up. I actually spoke to a police expert witness yesterday.
Really?
Now, I don't even know what he rang me about, to be honest. It just seemed quite random.
Maybe he just likes you, Dave. Maybe he just wanted to see what Dave Crossland was up to.
No, there was a question, but I can't remember what it was. But anyway, we got on the subject of organised crime within steroid supply within the UK. Now, Mike has promoted that this is going on for a long time, and I've always argued that it isn't, and that the vast majority of steroids sold in the UK come from UGLs that are homegrown, that they develop. So they may start to employ people, But in generally, you know, they are single operations, grassroots type operations. And what they generally don't do is they don't have fingers in other pies, and they're not funded by organized crime.
Okay.
And he's like, no, organized crime is starting to invest in UGLs and put bankroll in large operations. I said, well, that doesn't work because steroids are sold via brand. So if you were selling cocaine, it's unbranded, or you're selling weed, or you're selling ecstasy, or whatever it is, if you suddenly, as a manufacturer, get an injection of cash, which means you can produce 5 times as much,
yeah,
your marketplace isn't limited because you made it, because you're not branded. So as a result, you can push it into retail throughout the area in which you retail. But with steroids, if a lab, say, I don't know, Dinosaur Gear, sells 2,000 vials a week, and suddenly they get an injection of cash, which means they can produce 10,000 vials a week.
Yeah,
they're not going to suddenly get 5 times more customers to buy Dinosaur Gear because their market base is set on the reputation their brand has, so their customer base is quite rigid. And it takes time to develop that brand to a point where they will sell more because it's got a better reputation or it's more well known by more people. So you've only been looking at a very aggressive marketing strategy.
Yeah.
But even then, it's not. It's generic. It's going to grow itself. You're not going to need a big injection of cash.
Yeah. Also, is Dinosaur Brand, is that a real UGL you're aware of?
No, not at all.
Because that would be pretty sweet, right?
I know one called Zeus that's just launched.
Yeah? I want the Dinosaur Brand.
I do see T-Rex.
Yeah.
I do see organized crime getting very involved in Europe. And particularly in the supply of pharmaceutical drugs.
Now, that makes sense to me. And I feel like that was probably, say, 10, 15 years ago, even a bigger thing, you know, when diverted pharmaceutical grade gear was probably the mainstay before the UGLs came into play.
Yeah. And even still now with stuff like Clomid and, yes, and Novadex. And again, they do tend to see them coming in from the Eastern Bloc. Okay. So I definitely see organized crime involvement outside of the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, I am aware of the Hells Angels in the UK getting involved in one UGL.
Really?
And they packed it in after 3 months.
Really?
Yeah, they said it wasn't worth it for them.
Huh, no kidding.
Packed it off.
No kidding.
So,
because you could make meth and make a lot more. I'm sure you can make a lot more money off of shit like that than you can off of gear. You know what I mean?
I think the problem that they have with it and why they look at it is that they don't have the ability to get rid of it all straight away.
Okay.
So again, with a UGL, your sales are based on your brand reputation. So your sales are fixed.
Yeah.
If you suddenly produce more gear, you can't suddenly push that gear out there and get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no incentive for that. You have to expand the business as you would with any company, any legit company.
Yeah.
You have to develop the brand recognition, get a reputation for quality and good dosing, and then you can expand the brand that way. So it's not based, generally speaking, on UGLs not having enough money to buy the drawers in. It's based on the UGL brand just not being of high enough reputation to demand a bigger customer base.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Where with meth, you know you can flood the market with it through as many outlets as you want because people aren't looking for Scott McNally's meth balls. They're just looking for meth.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So that's all they're interested in is the product. They're not interested in where it came from. They don't give a fuck. As long as the product is good quality and it's available, they'll have it. And that's the big difference between most illicit drugs and steroids. Steroids are a brand. They're sold on brand. They're sold on reputation. And in that way, the market works like any other industry.
Yeah.
You expand your UGL because it has a reputation for being a good quality value for money product.
Yeah, and you're selling it. You need to expand. And yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, listen, let's take a quick break here. We will come back. We've got a bunch of listener questions. Anybody who's watching live, you're welcome to put your questions in. Otherwise, we'll tackle our questions that we already have. Guys, we'll be back in just a minute.
Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to jump into this episode of Drugs and Stuff to shout out our great sponsor, True Nutrition, who has stood with us for quite a while now. I'm super grateful that they are on board with us. True Nutrition is a company that I've looked up to since I've gotten into bodybuilding in a serious way. I mean, if you go back to the message board days, like if you go back to Intense Muscle, and you can see that this is a company that was built by people that love the sport, people that you can trust. So you know you're going to get high quality products with them, and you know you're going to get the right prices. These guys are not trained to gouge you. That's one of the things that I've always loved about them. If you just go over to TrueNutrition.com, you shop around, look at what they've got, I guarantee you that you are going to find some stuff that you can use and some stuff that you want and some stuff that you need to help you to reach your goals, no matter what those goals are, no matter what your tastes are. So guys, thanks for listening to me ramble here about our awesome sponsor, True Nutrition, and use our code ADVICES that helps to support our programming and it keeps us podcasting. Guys, thanks, and I hope that everybody out there is taking care and being safe. Let's get through this thing.
All right, guys, welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. We have a bunch of questions today. Guys, if you want to post any questions, we have a Facebook group, Advices Radio. That's our audio affiliate. Anybody who's watching this now, if you're watching this on the recorded version on YouTube, if you guys want to listen to the audio podcast, everything is through the Advices Radio Network. You can find that at iTunes, Stitcher, podcast apps, or you can go to advicesradio.com. You can listen there. And at Facebook, we have our private group, Advices Radio. So we've got a bunch of questions. We had one about a product Richard Foster has, which I'll get to in just a few. That was an interesting one. I know we talked a little bit about that beforehand. Where do we want to start here? Here we go. How about this one? What are the benefits of a female adding in Novadex for her contest prep for wellness? Have you seen the new wellness division?
Sort of. I don't really understand it.
So here's all I've seen. I saw the girls this year, this last weekend, you know, at the Arnold.
This isn't a transformation class, is it, where you walk out with a cardboard cutout being a fat bastard and you're not anymore?
No. This is a new division. I don't have the actual layout of what they're asking for, but I could tell you what I saw work successfully at the Arnold Classic, because they ran amateur for this. What I saw were some girls that looked, they were bigger than figure. They had more muscular legs. They were verging on physique, really, but not quite physique. They're almost, the girls I saw that did well, you know, very capped delts, very hard. And good upper bodies, but definitely great lower bodies, like even highly developed lower bodies. And definitely, like, I would say a little much for figure is the way I would term it.
Well, surely it isn't that trained figure.
I don't know, man. I think it's gonna evolve the way, you know, bikini is evolved. When it first started, it was like literally girls that were just off the beach. And now it's like to get that look, it's very specific. But
I just don't understand the name. I mean, what you're describing is effectively a bodybuilding style class.
Yeah.
Now, if you'd have said to me, describe wellness, I would have said, well, I assume it's all about a healthy look, not being heavily muscled, not being too lean.
Yeah.
And just generally looking a bit athletic and looking healthy.
Right, you would think.
Which sort of is ironic that you would mention using Novadex in a class where you're supposed to be healthy.
Right.
Because obviously any drug use, you can question, is it healthy? I mean, Novadex can help women when it comes to fat loss, particularly around those stubborn areas. Yes, that's well established. You lower, you block certain estrogen receptors and you can start to improve fat loss. And obviously, Novadex isn't going to lower overall estrogen levels, so you're not going to have problems on that front as you would if you took Adex, Coromacin, or one of the other AIs.
Right.
It's difficult, you see, because like you say, you go back to bikini, and when bikini first started, basically it was a bird that looked good in a bikini with a big pair of tits. And that was pretty much what it was to some degree, and it just looked like soft porn. bending over and showing the lunch boxes and all sorts of shit.
Right.
As the class has continued, it's got more professional, it's got more serious, and it produces some very credible physiques.
Yeah.
And men's physique was a bit the same. Men's physique was failed bodybuilders who couldn't make the work cut in the weight classes, so they dropped out and, generally speaking, had shit legs. That's changed now, and now you've got guys in men physiques producing phenomenal physiques. And if you looked at sort of waist to chest tapers, they probably have the greatest of anybody.
Yeah.
So that as a class has developed and become much more.
And I think this will too. I mean you could argue that this is almost like a jacked bikini look. It's hard to say because there's only, we have a handful of winners here. I've got some pictures. Anybody who's watching, I'm going to post these up. So this is, this girl won, what is this, B class. I have the girl here who won the overall, and she's got a lot of muscle. overall to her. She's not quite as hard, I guess, as you would want for like, she's like Bikini Hard, I guess. She's like Bikini Hard. Now, I mean, what?
Yeah, they're all chunky on the leg front, aren't they?
Yeah. So, they got a lot of leg muscle. There's no question.
Yeah, they're all big on the leg front. Every one of them's carrying some decent sized quads.
And that's kind of what we were.
To some degree, disproportionately as well.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely have like a solid amount of muscle. You know, no question in their legs, especially. I'm going to see if I can pull
up. They're obviously not as lean, so I would argue that really having to use an estrogen blocker to create that torque condition is a bit stupid.
Yeah.
Because I don't see it, why it would be necessary. You're not looking at anything that would be in any way a hard condition to get to.
It's not like physique condition, I guess, is it?
No, nowhere near.
Let's see. I've got a. I'm going to put up a group picture here. This is from NPC News Online, taken over the weekend. This I'm not sure what call out this is from, but yeah. So I mean, what would we use Novadex for in a female, Dave? Why don't we hit that first? What would we use Novadex for to get a drier, harder look, right?
And to increase fat loss around the hip and upper thigh area.
Okay. So. You're saying, because see, I've never used Novadex with bikini. Let me put it that way to start here and my thoughts. I've never once used Novadex for bikini. I've taken competitors from the state level to winning national level shows, you know, to turning pro and competing at pro level. We never once used Novadex with these girls. I haven't considered using Novadex, honestly, with bikini girls. But that said, man, those pro girls, I might change my mind in the future because those pros are getting bigger in bikini and they're getting more cap delts. And I wonder, this is a different conversation, but I do wonder what's going to happen to the bikini division now that this is here. Is bikini going to become more pared back? When you're up close to those bikini competitors at the pro level, like I've been backstage with them while they're getting ready. I would say pumping up, but they're basically like just pumping their glutes, maybe a little bit of shoulders. They've got some muscle on them now, Dave, and they've got some hard muscle.
And that you see in all the classes. I mean, I remember that the Classic was originally developed. The original ideology around Classic was to create a class that could be marketed as a natural class.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't go there. And whether that you could point that some of that was because of judging, because judging does direct the way a class will go.
Yeah.
People look at the results. In this case, they'll look at the results of these girls from the Arnolds and they'll think that they need huge thighs for this class.
And I think that's what they are leaning toward. Yeah. Anyway.
And so what you'll see is in the following classes, you'll see girls coming in with absolutely huge quad development.
Yeah.
So judging does have a big impact on how a class moves forward and how it develops. But the irony is that the Classic was originally evolved as, and this was all to do with Weider's obsession with trying to get bodybuilding in the Olympic Games. Mm. And he needed to get rid of the drug connotation. So Classic was invented, and the result of that was now that it's as hammered with drugs as any class, and if not to some degree more so, particularly at an amateur level.
Okay, from NPC News Online, this is from the page talking about their standards and talking about classes. So like the other classes, this is going to be split up by height, not by weight. And it says, this division is for females with athletic physiques that showcase more body mass in the hips, glutes, and thigh area. The upper body is developed, but not to the same degree as the lower body.
This is wellness. Seems a strange name and a strange direction.
Wellness. So in a way, wellness. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's wellness. We think of what, like, ability to reproduce. You know what I mean? Like wellness, health, wide hips, good birthing hips, yet muscular. I don't know, man. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, would it be needed? I can guarantee that some of these girls are probably using it, you know. Novadex.
Yes, I agree. And no doubt if women start pushing the quad development, then the whole host of anabolics will come into play. I just find it a strange class. So what we're going to do is we're going to run a class for girls with big bottom halves.
Pretty much.
It seems a very strange class. Very strange class. And the name seems to give an image of something completely different, to be quite honest. But I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, so basically this is a class for bikini girls with big legs.
All right, we'll move on. We got another female question here. We'll stick with that. So guys, hang in there with us. We're going to get to your stuff. Kyle Becker, I see your question too. When should a figure competitor start super supplements in a 16-week prep?
How long is a piece of string?
I love that saying. That's a UK thing.
You know, what's the development like? What's the condition like? How far off standard is she? It's just an impossible question to answer. There's so much information required. And you know, what's the work effort like? You know, is this someone that's trying to achieve a physique that they're never going to get anywhere near naturally? What's their natural genetics like? There isn't a set time when you should start and use gear in any class or in any level of development. It's a personal thing. In the perfect world, you would exhaust your natural potential before you start looking for a chemical advantage, but that very rarely happens.
Well, for a prep, how about just for a prep? She's got 16 weeks left. She must be in really good shape to be only doing a 16-week prep. I'll start out saying that.
I mean, is it necessary? What's the muscle? What are they gaining to gain by running chemicals?
I think the main thing would be to retain muscle while pushing the diet, right? It's going to be the retaining size.
That's achievable naturally. The only,
for how long?
See, this is where.
How long? Because you at a certain level of condition, you're going to, you know, you're going to start to shrink up. I can even tell you in my own diets.
Yeah. What's the class again?
A figure.
So it's not high conditioned.
Figure's pretty high conditioned. I'd put it right
it's
up
not,
there.
It's not. You would, Jim?
I would. Yeah. Nowadays. Yeah. Yeah. I'd put it right up there. I mean,
I'm probably a bit out of touch here as well. I mean, I haven't judged a comp for over 4 years. So
yeah, they don't.
I haven't been to one for that long either.
We're looking at some of those girls are going to be as hard as women's physique competitors. I mean, we're talking lines in the legs and everything. They don't want to see like striated glutes, but they want to see basically everything else. They don't want to see. I don't think they want to see veins all over your abs, but they definitely want to see a strong level of condition.
The thing is with all this is,
I know, man. I know it's not a question you can just answer ballpark.
It's not.
You know?
I mean, I suppose you would, if you were looking for a guideline, it would be when you thought you were at the point where you were sacrificing muscle mass for condition, then you'd look at maybe a chemical advantage to hold the muscle mass. But I would have thought that more relevant would be the drug use in off season to gain the mass that they need for the class rather than the addition of drugs in the diet phase above. And I mean, if you're only talking about holding muscle mass through a dieting phase and you're not talking about complete utter shreddedness, then, you know, you could get away with 6 weeks at the end of probably 20 to 30 mg of Anavar if they've never used before, or just 20 mg of Anavar.
I'd even say 10, you know, depending on where they're at. I know people who have done that little, who've only used 10 milligrams of Anavar in figure.
A lot of it would depend on have they used chemicals in the off season to create the mass, how much of their mass is chemically built, how much are they relying on drugs for the growth. And then you're going to find you need more drugs in prep to hold that growth.
Yeah.
If they're completely natural throughout their off season and they're only using this as a little bit of a, you know, muscle gaining pre-comp, then you could probably get away with fucking clenbuterol.
Yeah.
I mean, Clem is particularly preservative of muscle mass.
Yeah, I think it's all, it's so individual. You know, it really is. It's so individual.
So I don't know. Is the honest answer with this? I really don't know. It's so individual and such a wide subject matter. I mean, I find it strange how you see drugs creeping into every class. And when these classes were originally conceptual, they were very much classes that didn't need drugs to achieve the look.
I think with figure, but, though, you today, the girls yes, are hitting today, it.
But you know, go back 8 years when it was first in its babies, and you were presented with physiques that didn't need really drugs to achieve the look they were looking for at the time, the initial concept.
I mean, at the end of the day, figure is all about your shape. You know, you either have the shape to be successful at it or you don't, and you can't drug shape. You know what I mean? No. So I think that's a big factor here. I'll move on, though. Morpsey has a question for us. He has a couple of them. I'll get to this one for sure. Experiences with varying calories, macro intake on training versus off day, off season versus on season, pros and cons. Dave, you're a guy who kept your calories high every day, right? You didn't lower food because you were not training, right?
Off season, I think it's pointless. I really do. I think it's pointless. I don't see it having any benefit. And all it's going to do is lower your overall calorie intake over an extended period of time.
Okay.
Comp, when you're trying to get the most out of the calories you consume and minimize, you know, and obviously have the maximum amount of fat loss, I can see there when on a rest day, because your energy expenditure is down, that you could have argument to lower your calorie consumption on that day, because at that point calories become so much more critical.
Okay.
But off season, no, in my opinion anyway, it's a completely, and the same with this, I run carbs on training days and I run fats on off days. Fuck off. I'm sorry, but just no, just off, fuck, go. It just, no, it's all wrong. It just doesn't add up in my head at all.
Okay.
If you're in a predominantly carb diet, what's your body going to do with the fats for the day?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to go ketosis for one day, and then I'm going to jump back out of it again. Piss off.
Check this out. So I was talking to Ron Partlow about this. IFBB pro Ron Partlow does our show here. It's just bodybuilding on Think Big and Advices. So he worked with Chad Nichols in the past, and Ron's a big guy. He would get over 300 pounds in the off season. Mm-hmm. They actually did more food on his non-training days. And I asked him about that. I was like, Ron, that blows my mind. Tell me more about this. Situation was, he said that they had to eat so much food that he couldn't do those extra super high days and still train comfortably. He said your stomach would just feel too distended. So it would be his non-training days, food was even higher.
Yeah, and the other thing is, on a training day, you've got that training window that screws up you eating.
Yeah.
My training window would screw up 3 hours because I really had no appetite post-workout, however much I tried. So, and if I ate too soon, I'd end up just throwing it back up in the gym, which was then a pointless exercise for eating the food in the first place.
Yeah.
So yeah, on an off day, I had the ability to get an extra meal in. And if you are scrabbling for calories at that level that you need that, then definitely, yeah, I fully agree with that.
What was your peak weight on Under Construction 1?
365.
365, and where did you start that?
306-ish.
And you were still solid. We talked about this before. You were still quite solid at 365.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't, I wasn't lean, but there was a large amount of water.
But that said, but there was some tissue in there, good amount.
For the weight,
yeah,
I think the condition was more than acceptable for the weight, yes. And I in no way would have been embarrassed about standing next to anyone who was conditioned, you know. Obviously, when we went beyond that, it all got wrong, but well, let's not bother with that one now. Right. We'll stick on the good stuff. So, I think imbalance to weight and size and strength and everything was a very acceptable balance. I do.
All right. We had a question here. Now, this is, let me see here. Okay, this is from Vincent Ford. That's his name on YouTube. iVinny over here at Instagram. He said he's got this product now, and this is something that I believe Richard Foster, our friend, your friend, Strong Supplements, brought to market. Says, I have a question for one of the broadcasts. Maybe Dave would be good for this one. This is called, do you know how to pronounce this? Velostil? Velocitil? Velocitil. He talked about this before. He says, any truth behind the claims that 2.4 grams of Velocitil per 25 grams of protein can increase protein uptake / synthesis? Thoughts on this? Will it increase protein synthesis even further on enhanced athletes that have an already chemically increased protein synthesis?
Right. The study-wise, most of the studies were done at 2 grams of Velocitil.
Okay.
And a couple of studies showed that when 2 grams of Velocitil was added with 6 grams of whey, the equivalent protein uptake was as 20 grams of whey with no Velocitil. So it makes your protein usage much more efficient. And when they did 20 grams of whey plus Velocitil, that was producing more protein synthesis than 40 grams of whey on its own.
Really?
So, yeah. Huh. So it made a 25-gram whey product basically is equivalent as a 50-gram product or more so.
So here's his question then to further this, because he says, so if this is true, like, why isn't everybody doing this then?
Well, it's a relatively new product. It's not the cheapest of products, so I think that's part of the off-put. I've not seen any studies in sort of real-world environments, but I've heard a few anecdotal reports of people definitely feeling fuller and feeling greater. I mean, if you already hammering your MPS and it is pushing as much as it can possibly go through,
yeah,
the only advantage to running this is that you could reduce your protein intake because you're going to get better use of the protein that you use rather than having to slam in maybe 600 grams of protein. You can come down to 400 grams and get the equivalent MPS levels. Yes, gear does change this as well. I don't know to how much an impact the two are separately. I would suggest that the two together would be more words going out of my head. Sympathetic to each other.
Okay.
They would support each other.
Okay.
Synergy. That was the word I was looking for. That it would create more of a synergy.
Okay.
But I would have thought, for most of us, I think most of us do run our protein levels probably adequately high. In fact, most of us probably run them too high.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So the advantage of this product would mean you could be much more cost effective with your protein intake. Now, at the moment, I believe it's available as a standalone product by a few companies as well.
Okay.
Richard puts it in his protein product called VelociWay, which is the stupidest name on the planet. And all I can think about is fucking velociraptors running around with dinosaurs eating protein.
It's part of the dinosaur gear line. Yeah.
It probably is, yeah, yeah.
Velocitrend.
Velocitrend.
Yeah.
the Raptor range.
Raptor ball.
Oh, God. But anyway, it does work. It does do what it says on the tin. How much impact is going to have on you?
What was I going to say? Oh, I forgot now. How about Tyrannosaurus? Sorry.
That's all right. Let's just change the show. We'll spend the rest of the show trying to think of dinosaur-related gear names.
Sorry.
Oxymephosaurus.
But I was thinking like Tyrannosaurus. How about Tyrannosaurus?
All right. Brain's gone blank there. No. Oh.
So here, I want to add this. Now, I don't know. It was called Velocitol, by the way, Kyle. Somebody was asking on the show what we were talking about. Velocitol. I'm going to add this. I don't know about this product personally, but I don't know Richard Foster like you know Richard. But I'm going to tell you this. Just my judgment as on him as a person is that he is a cool dude. That he's not out there to rip people off. He's not out there trying to make a fast buck. Yeah, of course, anybody who's making supplements is going to want to have something that is unique, that's going to give them an angle, right? So it would be great if this does what it says it does. If it didn't do what it said it did, if he didn't believe in it, then I don't think that he would get behind it. So I will say that. I don't know how well it works, but I would say that I would trust Richard that he believes in it.
Richard is a research whore. So he won't invest in anything unless there's the research to support it.
Okay.
So all I can say is from our current understanding, this stuff is effective. If further research proves that not to be the case, well, then that will be the case. I mean, you know, we all used to swear by branched chain amino acids, didn't we? And then, you know, you go back 10 years and they were you must be taking branched chain amino acids. And now we know that it's not really having much an impact. So, you know, it's a similar sort of situation. This could well be for now. The research says this stuff has a huge impact on MPS. But we might find in 5 years' time that not so much. One of the interesting things about this is it spikes insulin, but it doesn't alter BG.
Interesting. That's weird.
So, it adds to the efficiency of how it works because obviously an increase in insulin drive the nutrient forward, blood glucose doesn't elevate, so you don't get that action working against. So that's one of the things that it does do as well, which is quite novel.
Interesting. Ooh, here's an interesting one. This is a question I've gotten answered for. It's a client of mine. This is from Diva Kitty Bikini. She's a very hard worker. That name could be a little deceptive. How to fight hunger pains a few weeks out. Can I start this one up, Dave? Cause I have some stuff. And I just wrote an email last night. So I just get back from, you know, being out of town for a few days and I'm a little behind and I tell Victoria, oh, I just have one more email and then I'm going to call it a night. And then I find myself like furiously typing for the next 30 minutes, just answering one question about hunger. And this was to someone else, but to reiterate what I was writing last night. So first of all, hunger is going to happen, right? You know, hunger, we're not used to hunger in general. You know, what do we do all of our lives? We feel hungry. And what do? We look for something to fill that void. You know, when we start a diet now, we are literally creating a physical void where the food used to be, you know, but I don't think that it's the physical void that causes the problem. It's the emotional attachment that we have to that, you know, we start feeling like without the food, like that we are losing satisfaction. And before you know it, it's like nothing is fun anymore. You know, it's like, I can't eat, then nothing's fun. What are you going to say, Dave?
Can I kick?
Yeah, go.
Testodactyl.
What's that? Oh. Test that'd be good. Now, what kind of test is that, though?
No, that's right. Anyway, come on. Back to hunger.
Yeah. Oh,
sorry, it just popped in my head and I had to get rid of it.
So here's my thought, though, is that accepting hunger is going to be the number one thing because no matter what you do, you are not going to fix it. When you're a very low body fat percentage and you're shooting for lower, you are going to be hungry until you get fat again, you know, until you are at least, you know, 8, 10, 12%. That first month post show, you're thinking like, oh, I just nothing more that I want than a burger. But guess what? You eat that burger and what's going to happen 2 hours later? You're going to be back where you were before. It's just a matter of acceptance. Now that said, I say that first because you can get caught up trying to fill the hole. You can get caught up trying to take a drug that will make you less hungry or eat a thing that doesn't have, you know, that's going to be like a calorie-free food in some way. You know, Jell-O works for that, for instance. But you don't want to get caught up thinking, relying on Jell-O now, because that can become like a massive problem. I've seen people drink coffee to the point where one guy told him, yeah, you can have coffee. You can have black coffee as much as you want. By the time I get to the show, I find out he's drinking 3 pots a day, Dave. Now he wonders why his stomach hurts.
I got liters of coffee.
Yeah. I have a reason why your stomach hurts. It's all the coffee you've been drinking. So I think that acceptance is the number one thing. And that said, there are some things you can do. I find food-wise, if you can handle more fiber, using Metamucil helps. I know she does that already. If you take that scoop of Metamucil at nighttime, it'll expand, you know, sugar-free, of course, psyllium husk, it'll expand in your stomach, make your stomach feel a little bit more full. Sugar-free Jell-O can help with this, as long as you don't have issues with the sugar-free sweeteners. A small dose of ephedrine I found to be very helpful for hunger. But, you know, outside of that, though, it's like at the end of the day, you are going to have to accept it. What are your thoughts, Dave?
It's not really something I can talk from much experience of, really, because it's not that often I've been hungry in my life. coffee, water, the obvious go-tos. I've never found any foods that particularly have stopped hunger for me. Okay. So stuff like the Jell-O and stuff like that. I'd be sitting there with a ball this big. Yeah, I mean, I really would. And, you know, just shoveling it in and it just wouldn't touch the side. I'd probably make myself sick eating that much. But what I have found is distraction. Mm. I've always found that hunger becomes particularly problematic when I'm not doing something.
That's a good point. Yeah, if you're so busy. My first prep, I got laid off. And then I thought, oh, well, this would be great. I mean, it was planned. The business is going out. And I knew, I was like, okay, I'm going to be laid off and that'll be for the last, you know, 8 weeks of my prep. And I won't try too hard to find a job until after the prep is over. And oh my God, man, I suffered just sitting on the couch, have nothing to do. Yeah. I thought I was going to live the life. Next year, my girlfriend competes for the first time and I'm so worried about her doing well that by the time that she's ready, I'm ready. And I was so busy with work and so busy with taking care of her. By the time I'm in awesome shape, I didn't even realize it, you know? So I think that's huge, staying busy.
Yeah, and then there is the whole mental approach. There's not much that I particularly like about Dorian, but I remember one thing he came out with that I thought was very, very poignant, and it was quite simply this. He was asked how he coped with hunger when he was dieting and how he coped with cravings and how he go. Yeah. And he went, it's simple. That food will not achieve my goal.
Sure.
And his whole outlook and the mental strength of that man, you cannot knock. And his whole outlook was, you know, if I eat, that doesn't achieve the goal I want to do.
Yeah.
And I suppose some of it is the when I have dieted, when I've dieted properly and I've like comp dieted properly, many, many moons ago, for me, I actually welcomed the hunger because as I'd got it into my head, I sort of really rammed it into my head that hunger means fat loss.
Yeah.
So if I'm hungry, I'm getting leaner.
Yeah.
And if I wasn't hungry, then I panicked because it was like, I'm not losing fat now because I'm not hungry.
Sure, sure.
So I sort of spanned the tape, not deliberately, it was just how I'd sort of approached it. It was the first proper comp diet I'd done. And I didn't know any different. And my whole attitude was, I have to be feeling hungry, otherwise I'm not losing fat.
Yeah.
So the hunger became a reassurance that what I was doing was the right thing.
Yeah.
And when I didn't have hunger, that's when I started to panic. And that's when I was like, shit, I'm stopped losing. I'm not hungry anymore. I'm not losing weight.
Oh, yeah.
It's not true, but that was more how I approached it. But as I say, that was accidental rather than a conscious effort.
I was going to mention,
it's a bit like Dom's post-workout, isn't it? You know, if you get Dom's post-workout, it's a sign you've had a good workout.
Yeah, that's what we taught. Yeah, absolutely.
So you're going to grow then because you've got Dom's.
Green tea and white tea, those work very well as well for reducing hunger. And those, especially white tea, green tea is not that high in caffeine, but white tea is even lower. But I find that those definitely suppress my appetite some. And like you said, I think you make a really good point about the staying busy. And I'll take it a step further and say, do something for someone else. Like me worrying about someone else getting in shape, it took me outside of myself. I wasn't worrying about me so much. I wasn't thinking about myself as much versus me being laid off, sitting on the couch all day. All I had to do was think about my hunger, you know?
You see this in everyday life, don't you? If you have a couple or a family or a partner and one member's particularly seriously ill,
yeah,
you see the other members lose weight because they're too focused on that person's health. They start to forget to eat.
Yeah.
And so their calorie intake drops and they drop weight. So, you know, though I wouldn't recommend finding someone to worry about, it does distract you from the hunger that you get from not eating. I don't think we can recommend cotton wool balls, can we?
What are they?
Cotton wool balls.
What do you mean?
Have you seen the episode of Family Guy where they all become models for the mall fashion show?
No, I didn't see this one. At the mall fashion show?
And so because they're all hungry and starving, they've got cotton balls, you know, round balls of cotton.
Yeah.
Well, and they're dipping it in menthol throat wash, mouthwash.
Oh, God.
And eating them so they don't put calories on and they're not hungry.
Oh, God.
And that just pops in my head then when we were talking about things you could do to stop yourself being hungry.
I don't think we're going to get through all the other questions, guys. So anybody who asked any of these questions here, we will use the remaining for the next show. I'm going to hit a couple more, though. Big Back will finish with yours. I'm going to go to Jen's first, though. Best drugs or peptides to use after an injury, tendon rupture. And he says, great podcast. Thank you.
Best drug to use post-tendon rupture.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I suppose you look at your TB500, growth, TB157, TBC.
BBC, yeah.
Would be the first ones I'd look at, definitely. I mean, you could spin off from those in various directions in regards to whether you want, you know, peptide versions of growth hormone. They'll all have a positive impact if the real thing's not an option.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of those are fairly standard stuff for that. And blood flow. For any tear, muscle tear, or that sort of injury, blood flow is crucial.
That makes sense, yeah. I've even heard that cardio can help to speed up recovery because it does increase your blood flow. So even if you were to say rupture a bicep tendon, being able to do cardio is going to get you healthy faster than no cardio at all, just sitting there.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
And I agree. TB5. You know what? I just used BPC. I had gotten sick now a couple of weeks ago. And now I don't know how beneficial it was, but basically, so I got really sick and everything that I was reading with the fever I had and then the sinus and stuff issue afterward, that I was dealing with a lot of inflammation. And I believe that I had like a huge, just huge cortisol dump during the bulk of the sickness. And I just was so foggy afterward. I believe that my inflammation was really high. So I have BPC here. I could use it anyway for some nagging tendon issues. I ran BPC for about a week after I was sick. I don't know if it sped the recovery up, but I did just give it a try. And obviously, I knew I'd feel better either way. So it's not something I could really prove. But yeah, BPC is great. And I've never used TB500, but I hear great things about the synergy between BPC and TB together. And as you mentioned, growth hormone. What about steroids themselves, Dave, in injury recovery?
Yeah, it depends on injury. So stuff like DECA will help with bone density. So you could argue that there's an aid there in recovery of a broken bone. Obviously, growth hormones help with soft tissue recovery. DECA's an anti-inflammatory, so you've got an aspect there. The same with the TBC, you've got an aspect of anti-inflammatory impact there as well. And obviously, you know, test is going to improve MPS, and we've been talking about that a lot today anyway, which in turn is going to help muscle tissue repair and knit back together. Generally, soft tissue, growth hormones, your daddy. I mean, I recently had some surgeries and I've run a very small amount of growth hormone, and it is a small amount, and it's knitting together incredibly fast because of it.
Nice.
Depending on the level of the injury and where you're at will depend on how impacting they're going to be on your recovery. But I suppose with all these things, they need to be worked into a recovery program, which includes rehab work and physical activity in order to rehab correctly and all the rest of it as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's not something you can particularly do without.
Okay, last question from Big Beck. How does... and can long acting insulin play a role in bulking, or how does it play a role in bulking? Have you ever used like a Lantus?
Yeah, I'm just trying to work out if I feel it does.
I know some guys that are using it. They'll run that as like kind of their background insulin through the day, and then they'll still use, some guys are using a fast acting insulin on top of that at specific times.
I've done that.
Yeah.
Didn't find particularly any benefit. A lot of it's going to depend on how hard you're pushing the food. If you are really pushing hard, then yes, I can see how just increasing your basal insulin levels going to help with moving everything forward and keeping everything in line.
Yeah.
But as a growth agent, we've covered this a million times. I don't think it has a place. It's a complementary action rather than a primary action. So it's going to help you deal with the food you eat, but it's not going to create muscle mass like people seem to think it does.
Okay.
And that's pretty much where I am with it. You may get people that argue differ, but I've never, apart from self-reporting, which is notoriously shit, I've never seen any evidence to counter that. And I would have thought that if there was a secret weapon within insulin and muscle tissue growth, that it would have been used to win the combat and the development or the research of muscle wastage diseases.
Okay.
And it hasn't been.
All right. I've got just one more, and that'll cover everybody who asked questions. I know we had a couple people that asked multiple questions. I didn't get to everybody, all the questions, but I will get to everyone. Will my son be autistic or deformed due to steroids post cycle? So he had used steroids in the past. Is he at risk for having some sort of issues with his making babies now?
Possibly. Without testing, you've got no idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think if anything, you'd have a harder time producing kids, right? Like, you could create fertility issues. I mean, that said, I don't know if it does cause problems. I mean, but listen, you could have issues with, imagine if you're using, I mean, there's a lot of things here, Dave. What about this? So we've talked a lot about using UGL gear and increasing heavy metals. Now, if you had like a really high heavy metal level, I could see that causing an issue.
What, with a child?
Possibly. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but I'm just guessing here.
My thought, I've been laughed at for this.
Okay. Right?
And I've been very much ridiculed for this idea. But then I did speak to someone in cancer research who actually thought it had some legs.
Okay.
ITT plays a significant role in the production of sperm. Okay. Which is intertesticular testosterone.
Okay.
Obviously, when you're on cycle, ITT levels are increased massively. And that is one of the reasons why people who are on cycle are still capable of conceiving.
Yeah.
Because FSH and LH are shut down. So technically speaking, if you've no FSH and you've no LH, you shouldn't have any sperm production.
Yeah.
But we still do. And we still do because of ITT. So intertesticular testosterone is elevated when on cycle. It's one of the areas they look at in fertility with people on TRT, because when you're on TRT, you have low ITT. So that's why they often run HCG, because HCG increases ITT and therefore will remain fertile.
Okay.
Now, that's an artificial testosterone. It obviously is a half-decent copy of what we produce naturally, but it isn't the real thing. And there are other elementary factors like HCG and other compounds that are not there or not produced in the hormone because the testes don't go through their normal hormone production cycle.
Yeah.
It is possible for DNA expression to be changed. Now, we've seen this in environmental conditions. And a prime example of this is evolution of the Galapagos turtles. So, yeah. So there's quite a long list of words I cannot say.
we'll go through all of them one day. We'll make a whole video about that.
No, we will not. So what they found is that certain parts of the island that are completely isolated, the vegetation that turtles eat is high up.
Yeah.
And the shell shape has changed.
Yeah.
Because they've needed to get their neck up to survive.
Yeah.
So the only animals that have survived efficiently has been the ones whose shells are curved more at the front to allow that.
Yeah.
And that environmental condition has changed the expression of the DNA to allow for greater and greater curvature of the shell. The other big example that's often used in this and is the study of epigenomics is what they call it. Is that in the Dutch famines, there was no food, so obviously people were starving. But the kids born of that period of time, a large number of them have a much higher level of obesity.
Hmm.
Because they were born, and the RNA expression from their DNA was the fact that they were going to be born into a very low food environment. So as a result, the RNA expression was to dial back their metabolic rates as much as it possibly could.
Sure, okay, wow.
The DNA has not changed. It's just the strength of the signal from the DNA is being toned right down.
Okay.
As a result, these children are born with genetically slow metabolic rates.
Hmm.
The famines have finished. They've eaten normally, but they've gained fat at an abnormal rate.
Huh, yeah.
And it's taken about three generations for this trait to breed out. So each subsequent generation, the impact of this slow metabolic rate has diminished somewhat and somewhat and somewhat till it's now back to normal. So with all that being said, there is, in my head, argument to say that a child conceived of sperm that has been influenced by high levels of artificial testosterone.
Yeah.
It's not the fact that it's artificial, it's the fact that it's incredibly elevated.
Yeah.
Could, in theory, have a change in personality and intellect.
Mm.
Now, in general, what the science tells us is that high testosterone environments will increase intellect. They will increase the risk-taking element of a person's personality. Anecdotally, and it's not something I've looked at in depth, but just anecdotally talking to people who have conceived whilst on cycle, they generally report that their children are very articulate and quite intelligent, but they are also very prone to doing risky things.
No kidding, huh?
And the problem is with someone of that increased intelligence, unless it's correctly stimulated, that will soon manifest itself as poor behavior.
Yeah.
And that seems to be reoccurring. A lot of people report that, you know, their child is advanced for their age when it comes to their early learning.
Yeah.
But then when they come to the teens, their behavior becomes problematic because they're just not getting stimulated enough. And so they start to seek stimulation from other things, and they tend to be things that they shouldn't be doing.
Hmm.
So I think there's some argument that it is potential. That's a very oversimplified view of it, and I don't understand the science enough to get into it more.
Yeah.
But having spoke to people that do, the general consensus that came back was, it's not impossible. They're not interested in looking at it because there's no need to, but the general consensus I've got from more learned people in that field of work is that they feel it is viable. They can't say it can happen, but they think there is argument that it is possible. So who knows is the honest answer.
Interesting. Well, let's wrap it up here. We got through everybody's questions. We didn't get through every question, but everybody who asked at least a question We've gotten through those. Dave, what do you have going on for the rest of the day here?
Paperwork.
Exciting paperwork. All right. Well, in that case, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, head on over to TrueNutrition.com. Use our code ADVICES to support the show. Get a discount on some great supplements. And, of course, reach out to Dave. You can go to crosslands.org.uk. We've got a bunch of cool stuff coming down the pike with Dave's company, so stay tuned. We'll talk about all that in the future. All right, Dave, I'll see you next time.
All right, mate. Speak to you soon.